Hello everyone, and first I would like to thank Sabine for inviting me to give this presentation. So the topic is spatial variability of soil properties, particularly soil carbon, and interaction between terrain and management, effects of those on that variability. I bet I will be preaching to a choir saying that spatial variability is extremely important, and a tremendous amount of work has been done on variability of carbon. What still remains largely unattained is estimates of what will be gains or losses in carbon when we change from one management practice to another in our agricultural world, especially what would happen with those on large scales. And there are two reasons, and one obviously is variability in carbon, and then the other is that we are still lacking data, process-based deterministic type of data on the actual quantitative effect of various factors of soil formation and how they would interact with management practices in terms of affecting soil carbon. So the two main hypotheses, well, not so much hypotheses anymore, that me and my group worked with, that results of which I would like to talk about today, is first that changes in land use or management practices would affect not only carbon level in general and not only its variability per se, but also the extent and characteristics of its spatial variability. And the practical implication of that is that those soil-forming factors that control development of those spatial patterns, they will interact with management affecting the magnitudes and sometimes even directions of the effects that land use and agricultural management practices might have. The main source of data for the main experiment that we worked with is this Kellogg Biological Station long-term ecological research site located in southwest Michigan. The site has been established in 1988. It is RCBD design with 6 replications. And the experimental plots, they are quite large. They're about 1 hectare in size. So that gave us a very nice place to work with, because it was both giving us replications in terms of management, and it was giving us plots large enough for meaningful spatial variability analysis. So we conducted multiple sample campaigns at anywhere from 2003 actually to 2006. And what we did this spatial sampling within each experimental plot, ranging depending on depth and particular soil properties, anywhere from 40 to 100 georeference samples from plot. Okay, and the three of the LTR treatments that I would like to talk about today are 3 agronomic treatments. Those would be conventional tillage, that is chisel tillage with conventional chemical inputs, no-till with conventional chemical inputs, and and the third one would be organic management that has no chemical inputs and has cover crops. All three of those have this corn, soybean, wheat rotation, and the cover crops that we have in this organic management would be red clover, and now rye is added to it. So as some of you may or may not know, that using cover crops in those row crops is now very widely explored in United States Midwest and North Central region as one of potential strategies for mitigating greenhouse gases and fighting climate change. So in terms of actual processes that are occurring there, these retreatments give us nice gradients in terms of both chemical inputs, from nothing in organic one to the highest in no-till that time sometimes receives more herbicides for weed control. In terms of disturbance, we are anywhere from zero in no-till to quite heavy disturbance in organic management. Why it disturbed more than conventional till is because that same weed management has to be done mechanically, so it receives quite a number, sometimes actually weekly, additional tillages during June and early July, early parts of growing season. Then we have this diversity in biomass, which is higher in obviously organic management that has this additional thing, red clover cover crop to it. Okay, I will start with spatial variability characterization, and for that, using geostatistical tools and just the regular process of starting from data to sample variogram to variogram fitting, and then working with those variogram parameters, comparing them among those different studied management practices. And here is the result, the sample variograms for carbon at 0 to 5 centimeter depths at those three treatments. So it's about 16 years after the experiment has been established. Before that, it was one uniform field. And so what we see there that happened in those 15 years is that we have these quite strong spatial patterns being developed in no-till and in the organic management with cover crops. So you might say, well, we're not surprised that chisel plowing conventional tillage is so not so variable because it we have this homogenizing effect of tillage. Well, I just want to remind you that organic management actually gets much more of that homogenizing tillage effect. So what seemed to be the driving force in this for that variability is topography. And how did we guess that? Is we removed the topographical effect with multiple regression and then looked at what was left in the variograms. So you can see that not really has changed much for, well, some, but not much for conventional management, but we have these drastic reduction in spatial structure for no-till and conventional and organic management. So if we, in addition, reduce the whatever texture effect is left there after we after we exclude topography, there is still further reduction in spatial variability patterns of, well, all three treatments to some extent. So what essentially happens in our part of the world, and I understand that that definitely wouldn't be applicable to everyone, like, say, not in Florida, is the topography here is serves more as in this composite variable that combines in itself a variety of different influences. So textural influences, plant growth influences, water and material redistribution through the landscape influences. And this is basically, And this is basically, you know, a combination of those epitomized in this combined topography effect is what we're observing in these differences in spatial patterns. So just as an illustration, it's not just a 0 to 5 centimeter depth where we see those. It's 20 to 30, 30 to 40. It's still that same substantial difference between spatial patterns of conventional and organic management with cover crops. Okay, so as I said, what we see here as this main effect of topography is in fact of combination of variety of things and variability of biomass inputs across that diverse topographic relief would be one of those. So we do see, I don't have the data here to show, but we do consistently see creative variability in yields in organic management with topography. We see great topographical effect on those red clover, our cover crop biomasses. So what I'm showing here is the differences in spatial variability patterns in yields, well, which would you could look at as reflecting variability in biomass inputs in general among those three managements. And here is just example of 1 year, corn in 96, and here are those sample variegrams again. So what you see there is that there is stronger spatial structure in organic management yields as compared to the other two. So we try to quantify that difference by fitting a line kind of describing the variegram behavior near the origin by fitting a line to it and looked at the slopes of those lines. So just to show you that it's not just at 96 that was, you know, so conducive to our consistent with our hypothesis, but in actually in 4 out of 6 years that we looked at, we did see stronger spatial patterns in organic management yields as compared to the other two. And of course, that makes perfect sense if you think that unlike the other two treatments, they don't get any of those uniform fertilizer or herbicide inputs that would make life so much easier for plants when they're grown across diverse landscape. Another potential contributor to what we see here as this cumulative effect of topography would be erosion. And to have a closer look at it, we upscaled to another experimental site in this area, and that would be a scale-up experiment. It's again a replicated study, but experimental units here are not plots, but actual agricultural fields. And what you see here in orange would be fields in our conventional management, and green would be fields in organic management. So what we did in each of those fields that had noticeable topographical gradients, we established several transects, something like this, where we would conduct sampling and monitoring at summit, slope, and depression positions. And well, the whole experiment was established in 2003, and in 2008 we collected soil cores to 0 to 100 centimeter depths from those three topographical positions across those multiple fields. And what we saw there, and well, we're still working on processing the data, and one thing that we did look at is the depths of AP horizon, which you would normally expect that in, you know, everywhere, regardless of management, you would see higher depths of AP horizon in depressions as compared to summits or slopes. But what we actually were observing in those multiple fields that we looked at, that the difference between depressions and upslope locations was substantially smaller in conventional management as opposed to organic management. We don't pride ourselves that in 5 years we actually had so much accumulation of carbon due to, I don't know, our cover crops, so erosion is one of the things that we're exploring as potential source of these differences. So what we have is essentially observational study, observational data collection on a variety of these spatial influences or factors working, affecting carbon distribution across landscape. And now we have, overlaying that, we have those management practices with those different management gradients. So what happens when the two interact? So again, let me show you the effect of topography in general, and then a couple of more specific items, which again would be part of that topography in general effect. So looking at total carbon, so carbon concentration at 0 to 5 depths across entire terrain, you'd see what you would expect is lower carbon in conventional tillage. And then, again, in those 15, 16 years, we have more carbon in no-till and organic management. If we look at two topographies separately, the upper slope topographical positions, which would be summits and slopes, and valleys, that would be depressional low-lying areas, we do see a little difference here. So our organic management would have lower carbon than no-till in upper slopes, but it will be comparable and not statistically different from no-till in valleys. So if we look at this 20 to 30 centimeter depth, this is where the difference would be quite drastic. These are our results for the entire terrain. If we just look at upper slope locations, there is virtually, 15, 16 years of organic management, cover crops, no-till, and no difference in carbon. Okay. And in valleys, there is quite a substantial gradient of carbon, again, consistent with what we would want to expect. So here is an example of this interacting effect, topography versus management, that we just must know about in order to be able to say what will happen if we change from one management to another, looking at not just a small experimental site, but at, at the field or farm. Another illustration of the same thing now with texture data. So we looked at in our experimental site, texture and carbon were related in this piecewise manner, as I bet many of you have seen similar things as well. So what is more relevant to the interactions with the management is that the slopes of those regression lines are showing relation, so relating carbon with, say, clay plus silt, that the slopes of those lines were actually different among those three studied managements. Here I'm not showing the data because there were too many, so you can see here, are just the fitted lines. And the numbers are in the table. So essentially what happens is that if we are comparing, say, conventional organic management with cover crops and no-till in coarse textured soil with low clay and silt, no difference between those two. If we compare them in fine textured soils, this is where, they will be substantially different. Yet another illustration is with existing carbon level, so what was there inherently before we came there with our experiment. In 1988, before that experiment was set up, what has been conducted there is baseline sampling, georeferenced. And what we did in 2006 is we relocated those exact sampling locations, and you can see them marked with stars of different colors. That's the spots that we could find within the actual experimental plots there. So we resampled them in 2006. And just want to show you the differences that we saw. So if based on those carbon data that I showed you earlier, you wanted to congratulate us on doing good job in sequestering carbon, I have to disappoint you, because what actually happened there is we lost carbon in conventional management, and we just barely hold the ground when it came to those no-till and organic management practices that were supposed to sequester carbon. So the difference, this is the change, and it was significantly less than zero for conventional tillage and not significantly different from zero for these conservational managements. Okay, more related to, you know, again, the interactions between what's there and our management. Here are the relationship between the baseline carbon and change that we observed. And, well, the key thing here is, again, those relationships were not the same in those three managements. So here are the slopes from that regression, and they were not significantly different from zero for conventional tillage and for no-till, and they were that was a significant negative relationship for organic management. So again, if we were doing our projections of what would happen once we, you know, once we convert from, say, conventional management to management with cover crops, the answer to that question, how much carbon we can gain, would depend on which area with what initial carbon level we are talking about. A very simplistic illustration of, you know, why it, again, it is important. So let's say I want to know, again, how much change in carbon would occur if I switch from conventional management to management with cover crops. And let's say that from somewhere I know that here are those true changes that will take place. And again, based on what I understand now about at least our studied area is that there will be less eroded knolls and summits, say some intermediate areas at flats, and relatively high numbers in depressions. Okay, so to answer this question, I'm conducting this experiment, running this experiment as any sensible person would do. I'm placing my experiment in a perfect, nice, you know, least variable flat area. Okay, so that's when I'm done with that, let's say 5 years passed, and I'm observing this difference in carbon between my two, you know, conventional cover crop based managements. And then say a farmer comes to me asking what would be gain in his field if he does the same thing and switches to cover crop based management. Well, if his field is, you know, this arranged topographically this way, then my prediction, and the only prediction essentially that I can give him based on my small experiment is this number, 0.7. So in particular cases, my prediction will actually be good, but most likely what I will see there in his or her field is a diverse topography, and my prediction, my 0.7 answer would be either underestimating or overestimating what that farmer would expect to see in that particular field. So again, this is extremely oversimplified example, and the reason I didn't want to, I wanted it to show it this way is to emphasize that no matter what fancy type of upscaling technique we would use, it would not replace the simple fact that we don't know what these gains in carbon or losses in carbon due to topography will actually be like. So whatever fancy, you know, upscaling stuff we have, whatever fancy interpolation stuff we have, we still must to have these process-based, you know, actual hard data on how much is gained or lost when we apply our management practices in respect to particular critical landscape driving variable, as terrain would be in, topography would be in this, you know, Michigan, and what could be something else in other areas. So I guess what the main the key point is that what we must have and what we must do is we must treat these critical landscape variables not just a nuisance that we've tried to avoid by, you know, critically placing our experiments, or a nuisance that we try to avoid by blocking out it. But it's something that we have to actually study as a factor, same as we're studying as factors our management treatments. And only then we can get some more or less meaningful numbers about reliable numbers of what would happen, what those interactions between topography and between management and whatever that critical landscape influence is in particular area. Okay, so in summary, again, what we saw is that land use and land management changes do indeed strongly affect spatial patterns in soil carbon. And as a result, what we are seeing is that magnitudes of the effects of different agronomic practices specifically vary across a landscape with diverse terrain. And so when we go into a business of upscaling our results to diverse landscapes, we must be careful and base our upscalings on some real process-based and deterministic experimental design obtained numbers. So, and again, quantitative experimental design based information on the interactions between treatments and the critical landscape-based variables is what is needed, but unfortunately there is still not much being done in that respect. Okay, so with that, I would like to thank, I would like to acknowledge a variety of funding sources that supported this research over the years, and I would like to thank you for your attention and see if I can answer any questions. That is exactly what we did in this study. So we didn't have, as what I think should have been done, topography as a factor. We had management as factor and topography as what would be an observational variable. And yes, I think it is it is possible, but the optimal thing still would be to have topography as a factor, because it's only when you actually place your experiment at certain topographical position that you know that you know better than if you have this regression model, who knows, coming from what sources of influence.
You presented your results on a concentration basis in gram per kilogram for specific layer depths. Have you looked at these comparisons to identify significant differences on a carbon stock basis?
Yes.
Rather different.
No, there was not really much difference in them. One reason for that is that, unfortunately, when we collected our, 800 soil samples for total carbon concentration analysis, we didn't do bulk density analysis to go with it. And again, there is a something not related, well, the people who ran that long-term experiment wouldn't allow us to make so many holes in their precious study for bulk density. So we had to rely on bulk density data that is collected at just five sampling plots for each sampling locations for each experimental plot. And what they observed from what we observed and what they keep finding from those is that there was really no significant difference in bulk densities among those treatments. So even though we did use, so the answer basically, the short answer, we didn't have the exact bulk densities that go with each of our samples. We had bulk densities for each plot, but those didn't vary large enough to, essentially the results were the same. For bulk density, that's again something that we couldn't do because, you know, so six replications, five subsamples per, you know, replicated plot, that's not enough for spatial pattern.